Some people believe there's a silent epidemic of error in the Australian health system.
I think it's so difficult for people to believe that doctors make mistakes, and the way it's been handled is, let's keep it quiet.
Lorraine Long set up the Medical Error Action Group almost 20 years ago. Between 70 and 100 complaints come to her each day, half of which she says can reasonably be classified as medical error.
From what I've found, about 1 in 10 patients will experience a mishap. One of the most severe I've found is wrong site surgery, meaning the wrong eye, wrong leg, wrong hip, even the wrong patient. It's either a complacency or it's lack of concentration, or they just don't know and they're taking a gung-ho approach. We'll open them up and let's see what we find. But there is a degree of shoddy medical procedures that's worrying, and that needs to be addressed immediately. But sterilisation failures is rampant. Every hospital, I find that's a problem.
Official and accurate figures on deaths and injuries from medical mistakes are hard to come by. Less so are the real-world stories of fatal error.
I realise it was mistakes made along the way, but that safety check is set up so that these things don't happen.
Bianca Jen's father was Benvenuto Cammina. He died in hospital in December 2010 after being given medication he was allergic to directly before surgery. But Mr. Cammina was wearing an allergy wristband warning of his multiple allergies to Ventolin, morphine and an antibiotic. But the senior anaesthetist on the day didn't check.
And when he was asked at the coroner's inquest if he checked it, he said he didn't check it. Why not? He just didn't consistently check any armbands. So it wasn't part of his procedure to check armbands. He would occasionally, but not always. That, to me, was the last line of defence, and that is up to him. He failed to do that, and that's his, to me, that would have saved my father.
Do you remember what they determined to be the cause of death?
When we walked in that door, they said my father had a heart attack. So initially, I thought that my father died from his own... his heart gave away. He had a heart attack before the surgery, meaning maybe he was anxious to the point where he had a heart attack. Didn't mention anything about allergies.
And so a week later, what was their explanation?
They said that they gave my father medication that similar to what he was allergic to.
And that was the cause of death?
That was the cause of death. They didn't say it was anaphylaxis. They said that it caused him to have a heart attack. They didn't say it was anyone's fault. They didn't say there was an error. They just said that's what happened. And to me at that time, I just couldn't understand how could that have happened if it was written in all his documents.
So what did the coroner find?
The coroner found that he died from an anaphylactic shock, from anaphylaxis, which caused a cardiac arrest eventually. And she made recommendations that the doctor from the pre-admission clinic, the anaesthetist at the pre-admission clinic, review his procedures because he failed to identify another allergy when he should have. And then she recommended safety verification processes be, although they already had them, and the doctor just felt that he didn't need to be a part of them on the day. Either the hospital didn't enforce these verification processes, they existed, but if you didn't do them, nobody got in trouble for it, or if, you know, it wouldn't be coming to your attention if nothing terrible happened. The nurses and the doctors, they're just two separate entities in this hospital working separately, and it's unbelievable to me that they get told certain things for safety reasons and whatever, and the doctors, well, we just do our own thing. That's the impression I got.
In 1995, the landmark Quality in Australian Healthcare study found the rate of so-called adverse events was 16.6% among hospital patients, accounting for around 18,000 deaths and 50,000 cases of permanent disability. The study's methodology and its conclusions have been hotly contested within medical, academic and political circles. But Lorraine Long argues little has changed since the report was handed to the government in the 1990s.
I don't see a reduction in medical error at all. I still see cover-ups. I still see the lengths health departments will go to smother things and destroy records. I still see all that, and that's a worrying aspect. But The errors are just the same. I'm not seeing a reduction. And you would think with all the recommendations made by coroners around the country and those recommendations being paid attention to and implemented, that systems would be better.
She also believes death certificates don't reflect the true causes of death.
60% of death certificates are false.
Where have you got that figure from?
By studying death certificates now for some 16 years and looking at them. One of the first things we do when we get medical records from people, we always ask them to send us a death certificate. And particularly we want the medical certificate of death that is completed by the doctor certifying death. And then we want to see what then ends up on the death certificate from the birth, death and marriage registry.
So there are two documents.
There are two documents. And also when a person is cremated, there's a cremation certificate and a body has to be inspected by a medical practitioner before that cremation certificate can be issued. And that's where a lot of things come up as well. And they say, well, this patient has not died from what the death certificate says and I can't issue a cremation certificate because it says here they didn't have an operation when in fact they did. And they've got a recent surgical scar. So little things come up like that. So you have a diligent doctor saying, I refuse to sign a cremation certificate, and the discrepancies you'll see on the death certificate. And I'd like to see change, and I've certainly written to a lot of attorneys general around the country saying, I want you to change the death certificate occasion and make it two doctors sign off.
And what's been the response from the attorneys general?
Okay, well, we're not looking at death certificates at the moment. That's that sort of go away. We're not interested.
Lawyer Catherine Booth heads Maurice Blackburn's National Medical Negligence Practice.
We receive hundreds of complaints every month from patients who've had medical treatment that they're not happy with. Only a few of them will actually go on to have a successful medical negligence claim. The law now is that you can only sue if you have a permanent injury, which is classified as significant, which means greater than 5% whole body impairment. And each state has a threshold over which you must jump before you can bring a claim. Yes, the types of cases we see are the common sorts of things that go wrong are in the area of obstetrics, emergency care, not recognising the seriousness of somebody's condition and being sent home, operative errors, as you've suggested, and, of course, misdiagnosis.
And she says the majority of complaints involve a small number of the same clinicians.
Well, sure. I think this recent research from Melbourne University about 3% of doctors accounting for 50% of complaints. That was a really big piece of research done over many years by well-known researchers. And I think that study means that there's a great opportunity for the regulators and the risk managers to achieve better outcome in safety and substantially reduce the number of complaints and bad outcomes if they target the rogue 3% of frequent flyers.
10 years ago, Australia introduced the world's first nationwide open disclosure policy. It was designed to enable health services and clinicians to communicate openly and honestly with patients when healthcare doesn't go to plan. In practice, it involves acknowledging adverse events, expressing regret, and explaining what steps are being taken to manage the consequences. But multiple studies have found that health professionals remain deeply concerned about the legal ramifications of open disclosure, in particular legal liability. Lorraine Long from the Medical Error Action Group says open disclosure hasn't delivered.
I was on one of the open disclosure task forces, and I found it quite interesting that the hospital said, well, we'll tell you what went wrong, but you're not allowed to sue us. And until you sign this document, we won't disclose that information to you. So it's not very open, is it? What hospitals don't understand is that, oh, just come clean and own up and stop panicking and going running off to your lawyers knowing what to do. The majority of people will not sue you. I said, what drives people to sue is to find out what went on. and what went wrong.
The open disclosure policy has been reviewed and a new set of standards will be endorsed later this year. The updated policy contains new elements, including an apology and for the word sorry to be part of that, but without making any speculative statements or apportioning blame.